name's John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matt Brender.
And today we're talking about community and careers, and we are really pleased to have a very special guest with us. With competing schedules and time zones, we've been working on this for a while. A very old colleague and friend of mine, Mr. Duncan Epping. Duncan, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for calling me old, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're like 80 now, right, Duncan?
An old acquaintance. I've known you for I don't know, less than 10 years, but over 5 years anyway.
That's true.
And Duncan Epping, for folks that don't know, works for VMware, and we'll talk a little bit about how he got there in a minute. But you just recently had a role change and a title change, Duncan. What you want to talk a little bit about what you're currently doing at VMware?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually trying to figure out what I'm actually supposed to be doing at the moment. But I recently joined the Office of CTO as a Chief Technologist for Europe. And I think my primary focus will be around strategic advisory when it comes to our larger accounts. Of course, you know, being speaking at some of the local events in EMEA at least. And, you know, everything outbound. So in terms of evangelism, blogging, tweeting, you name it. But besides that, I'll also be working with some of our ambassadors out in the field. So we have a program called the CTO Ambassadors. And I'll be helping those ambassadors to get their names out as well, because that's something where we currently are still lacking. So we have a great group of people internally, our best field folks. And, you know, these guys are well-known internally also within the customer group. But if you look at the broader community, I'm aiming to help them to get the names out, so to get them more visibility in the broader community as well.
Oh, that's a very cool concept. So it's I mean, you're going to kill me, but I might as well go in there anyway. That's like unicorn training. It's like a whole unicorn ranching program.
Here we go.
Yeah, I'll be having them eating bacon for 7 days straight. And if they can finish 50 kilograms of bacon, then they potentially can go for the VCDX unicorn panel.
I think a big part of our audience doesn't know what a kilogram is.
But. No. Okay. I'm just envisioning like the beginning of the Batman Begins or you know, the Karate Kid or something. Wax on, wax off, eat bacon. No, we're all joking. We had a prearranged agreement with Duncan that we wouldn't bring up the word unicorn, but which Amy broke. So it's very cool. Obviously, the Geek Whisperer is very much in favor of that person-to-person, making a personal platform for people to get their name out. We all feel like that's better than pouring millions of dollars into marketing. It seems to be more effective from our perspective anyway. But VMware seems pretty good about that still these days, right, Duncan?
I think for a long time, you know, a lot of people were focused on getting their names out, trying to build a personal brand, and VMware has always been really supportive of that. I think when you were still part of the company, John, you know, it was more, you know, people weren't really pushing for it, but it was a bit more support. It seems that that's slowly changing, and I'm trying to revive that again and see if I can at least motivate the people as well to start working on material. And, you know, whether that's a white paper or a slide deck or a YouTube video, that's really besides the point. But just trying to get their names out there, try to make a brand for themselves. And, you know, as they start growing, see if we can grow the company with it.
It's great. Well, let's take a step back for a second and talk about how you got where you are. If folks don't know, again, Duncan is arguably the most prominent blogger in the VMware ecosystem. His blog gets a ton of traffic every month. You're the author of many books over the years, you know, and done public speaking and things like that. And what's interesting to me is following your career, Duncan, how community has been a part of your entire trajectory. Before, you were with the CTO's office. You were in engineering. Before that, in tech marketing. Before that, in professional services. And before that, you'd been doing consulting externally. So let's turn that back around. Your early days, though, you got started online with online. There wasn't even social media at the time, I suppose. The online community, but back in the Netherlands, you were working on a non-technology community.
Yeah, that's right. when I started working, I worked for a great database company called Oracle, and they were still doing just databases. And, you know, I got involved with internet because you know, start downloading stuff, and then you figured out, hey, you can actually start sharing stuff on the internet as well. And, you know, I was always, you know, attending a lot of these local concerts, so more alternative music. So we're talking about hardcore punk, which is not a huge scene, but it's, you know, in Holland, it was, you know, I would say hundreds of people, maybe below 1,000, I don't know. It's relative big for a smaller sub-scene. But there wasn't really anywhere where you could find anything about these shows or, you know, music. Or there were some larger things in the US, but that's it. In Europe, there was nothing. So I decided, you know, I start out something around this space. So I started sharing a list of all the shows, the concerts that were in the that were being held every weekend in the Netherlands. So I just simply started, you know, gathering these flyers for these shows and put them up on the internet and see what would happen to it. And, you know, the first couple of weeks you have 5 visitors and then you have 7 visitors and you're like, oh, cool, I just doubled to 14. You know, best day of your life, 14 visitors in a month. But, you know, over time it starts growing and growing. And I noticed that, you know, people were looking for some form of platform. So it started out as a simple show list, and over time, you know, added a message board. We created this back-end engine, and we started adding things like interviews with bands. We started adding things like reviews of CDs. So we had people sending us CDs from all over the world, ranging from Indonesia to the US to Belgium. So I have an extremely large CD collection here because of that, which is a nice added benefit, I would say. But, you know, over time, a lot more people started to get involved, and, you know, it really became a community, and it started to grow as well. It started out with a couple of people, literally a handful of people, and then ended up being hundreds of people. And, you know, during the day, we'd have 60, 70 people online all of the time, which is, you know, quite big.
That's huge. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big website, and I think it was, you know, definitely the number one in Europe, but it was well known all throughout the world.
I love this story, and Duncan, it's such a great example because we can look back and make our point based on hindsight here, which is when people say, oh, I don't know quite how to get involved, so often we hear these awesome stories about you had a passion and a problem, right? You wanted to solve a problem for yourself, and you ended up developing all these community building skills almost accidentally. It certainly wasn't like you went out, hey, I'm going to learn how to build community around myself. You know, you wanted to know where the shows were. And I love that bit of advice for people is if they've got a passion and they see a problem or a way to contribute, go ahead and do it. People, I think, get in their minds like, you know, only career focus and put blinders on and don't do anything outside of that. But so often what we do on the side kind of leads us to where we need to be.
Yeah. So if I may add to that, if you look at the hardcore punk community, and I think it is the same in the punk community and some of the metal communities as well, the whole DIY aspect, so do-it-yourself aspect, is something that you typically see in those communities. So people start a magazine, they start their own record label. I even had a record label for a while. It's just something that, you know, that's really big in those communities. If no one else is doing it, just, you know, start doing it, because you can't expect, because they are small communities, relatively small, so there's no real money to be made here. So you won't see any corporations involved. So if anything needs to get done, you need to do it yourself.
That's a great story. And the thing that I pulled out of that, Duncan, that really made me smile was when you said you went from 7 people landing on your page to 14, and it was just a great day in your life. I love that idea for 2 reasons. One is to think that at any time in your life, no one was following you on the internet. That's like a nice reminder that we all start from 0 in our different scenes, whether it's technology or otherwise. And then number 2, like it tells me right away that there is something about the community building aspect that just immediately touched you.
No, that's definitely the case. But like, I think what Amy said is definitely true. I was trying to solve a problem for myself. It was difficult to keep up. And then you see that there's a demand for it. So other people, you know, are interested in what you're showing to them. and they start to appreciate it. And, you know, at some point, people even start feeding you data as well. So they started adding their own shows into it. We had bands contributing, you name it. So that's when it starts to starts to grow and grow. I guess, you know, there's of course two sides to a story as well. Whenever you do something, you know, in the social space, especially in communities, you can imagine that, you know, every once in a while there are heated debates, you know, whether that's on Twitter or back on the days on the message board. I mean, you see people now getting into really, really heated arguments, and people are like, come on, it's just Twitter. But that happened 10, 15 years ago as well. It's just, you know, the internet sitting behind a keyboard and a screen. You know, the barrier for making a...
Well, and that community, too, I'm actually curious. Do you find that some of the things that you learned about, you know, that was all of our probably, and those of us on the line here, probably all of our, some of our early training in terms of what social norms were on these new platforms. Did you find kind of being in the midst of it and moderating some of that trained you for what you would do next in terms of your online voice?
I don't know. I mean, there were so many heated debates at some point that was really difficult to moderate anything. Well, as you all know, I'm quite passionate when it comes to it, and I'm not really the person who easily backs down either. So,
I think if he's the shy and retiring type, Duncan, is that accurate?
Yeah, more or less.
Well, Duncan, I really see some themes, right? That has carried you through, and I don't know what's chicken and what's the egg, right? If I generalize to you and other bloggers, right? That DIY ethos of like, just do it. I don't care if it's my job or not. Let's just do it because something needs to be done. And you know, that kind of bias towards action, I see. You do have a strong online voice and you communicate well. And I think all of us realize that the practice of writing and writing and writing and writing has made us better writers and clearer communicators. I see that. You know, and then, you know, you have gathered around, and let's talk about that next. Maybe you have gathered around a set of people. You do connect with people. You know, I don't know if you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert, but online, you know, you are a connector. And I see that as a theme, you know, both in your career path trajectory and other bloggers. I see. I don't know. That's my generalization anyway.
To be honest, I don't, you know, if I look at introvert versus extrovert, I don't really classify myself the way. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we all behave in a certain way. Sometimes you're introvert, sometimes you're extrovert. I mean, when it comes to sometimes in a larger group, I can be, you know, pretty quiet, to be honest, and sometimes I speak up. It just depends on what the topic is, if I'm passionate about it, you know, how I feel that day. Even sometimes you won't hear me for, you know, a day on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it is, and sometimes you'll see 20,000 messages in an hour. So to me, you know, it kind of depends. I don't classify myself in that way.
Yeah. Well, moving forward, I mean, eventually you left Oracle. You were, I think when I got to know you, came up on my radar, you were at a consulting firm, and then very you were already blogging. And then very quickly after that, moved into VMware, from my perspective, moved into VMware's professional services organization, where you also kept a prolific blog presence. What was the origin of the blogging project for you, and how did you keep it going, and how did you put that much was that a conscious decision to put that much energy into it?
Well, if you look at when I did the music community, I had been doing that for a really, really long time, and you know, at some point I felt it was time to hand it over to someone else, so I handed it over to someone else, and then, you know, didn't do anything for 6 months, and I kind of got, I wouldn't say bored, but you know, things start tinkling, and you have the need to do other things. And I just wanted to share stuff with people, and I just joined this consultancy company and started focusing full-time focusing on VMware. And I figured, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I could talk about. I had been reading these awesome blogs by these guys called Mike Leverick and Scott Lowe. So I figured, you know, if they can do it, I should be able to do it. So I just, you know, open an account at a provider, and just started with something. And I figured I just gotta share everything that I encountered, because from my days in the music scene, I knew, you know, there's a couple of things really important. You know, first of all, quality, of course, but also the pace at which you release articles. So, you know, I already knew what people would be expecting and what was needed to get people you know, returning to your website on an almost daily basis.
So that's interesting. I that's so true. And it's interesting that you knew that. And I haven't talked about this in a while, but some of the stuff, like from the very beginning, when you talked about the immediate feedback of seeing how many people showed up every day, that's an powerful reward mechanism for people. It sometimes gets lost when you do corporate blogging. Like when you do corporate blogging, you don't see the stats. Maybe you get a monthly report. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're blogging with the rest of your team. You know, that powerful feedback. And I don't know, Amy and Matt, as you've worked with corporate marketing, the idea of you want people to come back every day, so you need new content every day. You say that to a marketing manager, and they get a kind of a white – their face goes white because that's a lot of work.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, it's that concept of like – well, in the unfettered nature of it, the unfiltered, the sort of freedom, the punk rock aspect of it, frankly, makes most corporate marketers pass out.
Yeah, and when you think about shared space, John, it's a function of a lot of different people's efforts. So no one quite has that same sense of satisfaction as like, I made this. And all yeah. seven of those people, there might be seven of them, but they all came to read something that I wrote. There's a really good feedback loop there that's very rewarding. So thinking tactically, you could tell somebody who's running a program to make sure to give that feedback to people. And then as an individual, don't be scared of the numbers. Like, it's actually quite interesting to realize that people are reading your stuff.
Mm, I get hung up on the numbers. So, Duncan, you once shared with me, you didn't actually sit down every night and write an article. You actually had a strategy around that, too.
Yeah, well, let me first add something to the,
story
that I just told. So when it comes to numbers, I wasn't really tracking the numbers, to be honest. I wasn't really motivated by the numbers itself per se. I mean, whether it's 100 or 5,000 people reading it, as long as it's useful to those 100 people, then I was okay with it. But I think what motivated me the most, and when I realized that people got something useful out of it, is before I joined VMware. So I started out at this consultancy company. I started blogging, but before I joined VMware, so I, you know, one of the VMware recruiters contacted me and said, you know, we've been reading some of your material, really interested in having a chat with you. We think you can contribute something to our local team. So that, you know, that kind of gave me a boost. But at the same time, there was this another crazy guy that contacted me, a guy called Chad Sakic, and he was a VP working for EMC. And I'm like, why on earth is a VP working for EMC contacting me about my blog? And he'd seen all of the material that I'd written so far, which wasn't a huge amount. But the funny thing was that he had an issue in his lab, and he actually solved the issue in his lab by using one of the articles that I wrote. And that's nice. That's when I also realized the impact that you could potentially have on, you know, writing these articles, but also how far these types of things can carry, and especially in the technology community, because, you know, it's a product that a lot of people started using around that time. So a lot of people were hitting the same problems as well. And then you start noticing that, you know, the impact could be quite big. And, you know, that's what drove me to start writing more and more, actually.
Well, I love that story, too, for its, again, I think I can see the theme building. We've got a Duncan's really going to kill me because I have a punk rock unicorn on the back of my phone case. I'll contribute an image. But the leveling concept, there's a great democratization, like you're saying. I mean, I think technology has that already, but blogging, it abstracts everything. In the end, it's back to your original roots. You wanted to solve a problem. You solved it. You documented it. And then, it doesn't matter if you're a VP or how many years you've had in the business. If somebody else solves the problem and helps you out, then that builds a connection.
Indeed. And what John just asked around creating the content itself, I was literally just documenting the issues that I encountered or the stuff that I learned during the day. So in many cases, what I would do is, you know, if I would go on site, solve a problem for a customer, in the end, you need to send them an email, explain them how you solved it, what the actual problem was. And I would just turn those emails into a blog article. And if I would have solved, you know, five problems during a day or encountered five issues, explained five different things, I would write five articles, but probably schedule those throughout the week. Because, you know, if you release them all at once, no one's going to read five articles you know, back to back. Typically, they will read one or two, and then they lose interest. They skip to something something else. But if you release them throughout the day, you will see that people will, you know, throughout the week, people will start coming coming back. And you know, it's pacing and spacing the articles. I think that's also crucial when it comes to releasing your material.
I've got a new tagline for you, and we can get away from the punk rock unicorn. I'm saying Duncan the Natural Marketer. you're describing like very basic like campaigns to keep people interested and warm, and a sort of drip campaign of information to bring them back to the site and keep them active. Like it makes perfect sense, but it's like intuitive to you, which is wonderful.
I've been surprised because even in the community today, you see people when vSphere 5.0 is released or 5.5 is released, they publish 20 articles at 9 o'clock in the morning, like every other blogger. So, you know, your articles are not going to be, you know, read as much as you hoped, at least not to the extent of the effort you put in. So why not just space them out and then release them at, you know, at the time where people actually have more time to read your articles? To me, it makes a lot of sense. You don't need to read a book for it, you know, in order to draw that conclusion.
And I love that one of the ways we've talked about influence marketing differing from sort of traditional marketing and PR is I think people get that launch day, you know, kind of mania where everything's got to come out like in that single point in time. But I think it's a great perspective to think about the end user. And frankly, also, if you want your stuff to be heard over the din, we often talk about 1,000 pebbles, and your strategy is exactly that.
Amy, the marketing manager, does the report 7 days after launch, and they only get their candies. They only get rewarded for the hits they get in those 7 days. So it has.
This gotta is, count the peanuts, is, or you're not going to get any
count
peanut
the peanuts.
Butter.
Exactly. So this, it has to. That's
what is plus 2 weeks. People don't buy technology except on the day it launches. Don't you know anything?
Yeah. Anyway, we should not make fun of our marketing brethren.
Yes, we should.
And sorry, Duncan, I cut you off.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to say that, you know, you coined the term marketing a couple of times now. And I don't, you know, to me, it doesn't have much to do with marketing. To be honest, I don't look at it from a marketing perspective. I don't look at it, you know, from, you know, marketing my own brand. It's just what I do. It's who I am. So it's, you know, Matt probably said it best. It may come natural. It's not something that I do as a job even.
Yeah, no, it's part of who you are as a person. And I think that's so true for such a large portion of anyone that listens to this podcast. It's really people are sharing almost instinctually and trying to be part of something bigger because it makes them happy. But I think it's fair to point out that there's a lot of people that are making a profession on doing what everyone that listens to us does. And we're happy to share some of the terminology and secret sauce so that they look awesome in the way that they already do naturally.
I also think that a lot of what we call marketing is just purely empathy, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. If I was going to come back to this website, what would I see? Oh, I would need to know what was going on. I've talked with people who are organizing events or things like that who've forgotten to put up a schedule or whatever. They've just forgotten to put themselves in other people's shoes. Oh, if I was going to come back to this website, I guess I would want to see a new article every day. So I just think of it not as marketing, but as empathy. Hey, so Duncan. So then I think this goes without saying, but maybe let's talk about it a little. How do you feel like your blogging and extracurricular activities, because this whole time you're not getting paid for this, right? This is not part of your job at all. How do you feel like it has affected your career? And I know positively. I don't know. We've talked to you. You early on, you got some attention about some of the stuff you were writing. Do you feel like it's always been a positive force? Do you feel like it ever impacted your ability to do your job negatively? Do you ever feel like that sort of thing, or is it always certainly from an outside perspective, it's giving you some visibility, and that's also actually both pros and cons, right? People are always looking at what you're doing.
Yeah, show us some scars.
there's plenty of scars, but let's start with the good part first. I think, you know, if I look back over the last, you know, 6 to 7 years, it's fair to say that I would not be where I am today without blogging, Twitter, Facebook, and I wanted to say Google Plus, but who uses that platform anyway?
Talk to us about your LO strategy, Duncan. We really.
I mean, it's the amount of visibility they have through the blog writing and, you know, the books as well. It's been insane. It's been crazy. Especially within VMware, I think that's the cool thing about a company like VMware. If you talk to some of the executives, they do follow a lot of the blogs. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that. But, you know, people, even people like Steve Herrod back in the days, he would read a lot of the blogs. But if you look at the team internally right now, I know, for instance, that Raghu reads the majority of the blogs out there. And he's actually actively looking for feedback from the community. So, there's a lot of people reading, and it helped me a lot, because it helped me, during my career, at least landing some of these other jobs, but also just getting visibility internally, being able to walk up to someone's office, knock on his door, and say, "Hey, I'm so and so. I'd like to have a discussion about this and that." And then they will probably respond with, "You're the guy who wrote that nasty article about X, Y, or Z." And then the conversation starts. I apologize, and then we, go ahead.
At least there's some context. You're not starting from zero.
You might have to give us some tips on this one, because we've teased Brinder a bit in the past of getting called into the principal's office. So we might need some tips on how to stir up a bit of controversy, but use it to open the door instead of get in trouble.
Hey, and just to preface before you get to it, Duncan, I will say that the few times I've gotten in what seemed to be pretty major trouble because of social activity, it's turned into more good than it ever did bad. It's always resulted in more connections with more people, and has turned into pretty wonderful things. So how has it affected you?
Well, I think, first of all, I think the same applies to me. Typically, when I write about a topic, you're either explaining how something works, or you're explaining, how bad something sucks, and you describe the reasons why it sucks. Now, when you work for an engineering company like VMware or any other company out there, same applies to Cisco, EMC, or any other of the companies building products. When you tell someone his baby is ugly, he's not going to be happy. So, typically the first response is not going to be a positive response. And I've had that in many cases. I've been involved in way too many escalations. I, had chats with managers and all the way up to VP level. But at some point, in my opinion, if you want to improve the quality of a product or the quality of a service you're delivering, then at least someone needs to be capable of speaking the truth. And, sometimes I do that in a Dutch blonde fashion. Other times, I try to be more gentle. But, I've been in plenty of these conversations, but it's also how you try to turn things around, how you explain, how they can improve things. So it's also trying to at least provide them with the arguments around why it doesn't work this way, what customers would like to see, or how they prefer to use the product. So you can always get something positive out of it. It's just how you spin it.
Go ahead, jump in, Amy.
So I want to jump in there because a couple of points that you hit on. I'm really interested in, as you, like you said, gave this feedback, and as you've watched your following grow and sort of changed your role in the organization and became more and more visible, did you have a moment in time that you felt like you had to change how you operated, or did you, did the mode change? Did you feel a little more, pressure because you were more public? I'm sort of curious if there was a moment, and then how you dealt with that, how you kind of worked through that.
Yeah, to be honest, I never really thought about that for too long. Every once in a while, should I really say that? Should I really go there? But then I figured, someone needs to do it. So if no one else is willing to do it, then I'll do it. There hasn't been any real pressure around this. Up till today, I've always felt as long as I can back up why I'm saying things and why I want to discuss certain things, it should be good. You should be able to explain it. So, of course, in hindsight, there are always things that you feel you shouldn't have said, or you should have probably phrased it in a different way. But No, it's not something that I typically tend to overthink. So I'm fairly straightforward when it comes to this. John has probably seen many of the threads that I've started up internally when it comes to feedback, and not really well known for dressing things up. So,
That's genius what you do. I'll make a generalization about blogging DNA in general, right? I think you and I look at other bloggers that have come from outside and inside, especially both, one, because you're an operator, right? You actually use the software before you came inside, right? Which a lot of the engineers have not. So that's super valuable in our discipline. But two, this you had all this practice about having opinions and talking to people about your opinions, whether it's part of your job or not. And I see that – I saw that in – what people don't realize is you are also vocal internally, not just on your blog. You don't tell everybody their babies are ugly just on the blog, which is sometimes inappropriate if it's a if it's an internal baby. You give pointed feedback internally, and you do, and William and Alan and all the rest of the bloggers that I saw come inside, so valuable to the organization to be able to kind of cross swim lane, say – this is not working, or that's not going to work, or hey, you know, here's some red flags I see, or kudos as well. Like, this is really working well. Let's please invest in this more. But I don't know. I think you brought so, or you bring so much value, even for the internal feedback as well, Duncan.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you just made. I think if you look at the people that you mentioned, folks like William Cormack. Those guys, if you look at the amount of material that they produce externally, but at the same time, you know, the bugs they file, the feedback that they send to engineering, the feedback that they send to PM, I think that's why they're being valued to a certain extent internally in a different way than externally. So externally, you see the blog articles. Internally, they mainly see things like the bug reports and the email reports that go out about, you know, complaints from customers or why things are not working in a certain way. And I think it's a two-way street here. In my case, you know, every once in a while you complain about stuff, but at the same time you also hand them a lot of information around how customers are using the product, what they would like to see, what they should be added in the near future or in the distant future. So I think from an engineering perspective, there's a lot to be gained, you know, besides the occasional moan about things.
Now, you were also part of a product team. You were part of the vSAN team. I don't know. I don't quite know the capacity, or if you were officially part of it or associated with it. But you helped birth this product for VMware. Did that help? And going back to what Amy was saying about changing perspective, I'm curious as to your perspective on marketing versus technical marketing versus putting the best face on something versus telling the truth. Did that change your I don't want to say did that change your views at all. Did that bring you to the dark side? Did that change your perspective on what it was appropriate to say externally versus internally? Because that was your project. You were part of the project.
Yeah, let me rectify that. So I've never been part of the vSAN team. I was actually part of the Evo Rail team. So we build our own product around vSAN, basically a hyperconverged platform for OEMs. And you know, it definitely changed my perspective. I think I love being part of an engineering team. It's cool to see something, you know, from just a tiny concept. There was three lines on the whiteboard that started, you know, we started diagramming things, trying to figure out how workflows work, and then in the end it's a product that's announced at VMworld by Pat Gelsinger up on stage. You know, it's being sold by six or seven vendors. That's really, really awesome. But what I did notice is the big change for me was when you provide feedback to an engineering team which you're part of, it's being received in a completely different way, because there's a lot more emotion attached to it when you're part of the same team. So that's definitely a challenge. Closely aligning to an engineering team, you know, makes providing feedback at least externally different when it comes to the or internally different when it comes to the external facing part. Yeah, the biggest challenge here is I was part of the Evo Rail team for over a year, and you can't write about anything related to Evo Rail when it's not a released product. So, you know, even the blogging part, Twitter, it becomes very, very complicated when you're part of an engineering team, because there's just certain things you can't talk about.
Yes, I think we're all grown-ups here. I think I'm a very big advocate of social media, obviously, but I'm also a grown-up, and I realize that not all conversations need to happen in public. I know Amy is also has explained that to us many times.
Well, and sort of jumping off that to go a slightly different direction, the other thing that I'm sort of curious about, again, and as you grew to be more of a public figure, I happen to know this story, so I'm leading the witness here, but I have referenced it before and would love for you to share. I know you have different rules about who you engage with, how you engage, et cetera. And I, like you said, I think this has always been who you are, but I especially like your rules about Twitter versus Facebook. And so, again, we think about the tools that we use for work, but also when you become more well-known, you engage with more people, and how you kind of manage that aspect of your life, what to make public, what to keep private, et cetera. Do you want to talk a little about that?
Yeah, sure. So it actually took me a while to figure this out, to be honest, because I've been doing social media since more or less Twitter began, Facebook, started out. You create an account and figure, people start adding you. You add people back. You start following a lot of people. Especially Facebook was challenging for me. Twitter wasn't really that challenging, to be honest. Let me explain the Facebook one first. Especially when you start talking at a lot of events, you have a lot of random people adding you. Some people that you've met, spoken with for about 2 or 3 minutes. Some people that you've never met as well. And every once in a while you add someone, and then after a while you figured, should I have added him to my Facebook page? And some of you may wonder why, but it's still something personal for me. If I look at Facebook, for instance, I do post pictures of my kids on Facebook. I post pictures of family holidays. There's some personal things. There could be anything, but family related stuff, for instance. And then after a while, I started figuring, there's a lot of people out up on my Facebook account as friends, whom I actually don't know too well. So the way I started looking at Facebook, at least, is from a friend's perspective: A, have I ever met you? And B, would I go out on a Friday evening with you to drink a beer, while I could also be having a fun time with my family? If the answer to that is no, then I'm not adding you to Facebook, because Facebook to me is a personal thing, and I think the people who are on Facebook, who are my friends on Facebook, I should be able to trust them at least with the stuff that I occasionally blab out. So I just want to make sure that the people who are part of my friend list are the people that I trust. That I would normally trust as well, and I would normally hang out with.
Yeah, I like that, the idea of having an explicit social strategy for yourself. I think we've all kind of struggled to find the lines between the gray of each of these different platforms, but that seems to work for you. And while that might not be exactly how all four of us do it, I would just advise people to think about it, because it does have an effect on your work-life balance as you get more influential.
And I love the simplicity of it. That's one of the reasons I've always Duncan taught me this, actually, at a dinner a while back. And there were a lot of people there, and it's something we talked about. And I thought, what a nice, simple rule, because I know a lot of people, I think, struggle with that question, Duncan. So I think it's kind of a great one that people can roll through and decide for themselves. Because I think you also have sort of a brand page, because you do have public stuff going on. So you've got Facebook, the sort of marketing hat on, but you've got Facebook, the personal hat on too. And yeah, I think that's a totally working strategy for people.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I actually created that brand page, because some people just wanted to follow the blog without hitting the blog. So they asked for it, so I created that. But if I look at the social media aspect, I think a lot of people tend to forget that the word social is in there for a reason. I mean, if you relate that back to normal life or in real life, if you're not talking to someone on a regular basis, and you have this Rolodex, just a map of someone's phone number, addresses, and your name, at some point someone's going to be removed from that Rolodex simply because they were part of your life, in a different stage or whatever. But you know, people come in and they come out every day. Same should apply to social media from my perspective. And I, you know, kind of have the same rule for Twitter as well. If I look at Twitter and I love Twitter and you know I follow plenty of people, but I can only follow people to a certain extent. So you know, the social aspect is there as well. If people, for whatever reason, and I've seen this happening, you know, if there's racism going on or people are just abusive, for instance, I also remove them from Twitter. And even if they, if I would have considered them to be friends in the past, then you know, I don't have a problem with removing people, because that also happens in real life, and that's the social aspect of social media.
I think that's fair. There are people who I don't hang out with.
Yeah, I mean, although it's fair, there's also a lot of people still have challenges with it. Just unfollowing people or unfriending people, there's still a taboo around it, if you ask me. A lot of people don't tend to do it, or they will remove them from their timelines, but they won't unfollow them.
Yeah, there are all sorts of social signals and social gestures that, one, we're still figuring out how they work, because they don't really have analogies in private life, right? I might like you and say hi on the street and talk to you at the store, but I don't invite you over for dinner. Well, how does that translate to Twitter or Facebook?
I think we should really dig into this in a whole episode, because
yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It is, because I think it reflects social relationships and where we're from locationally too. There's a lot of culture that's overlaid on these things, and a lot that's implied. It would be more fun to make it explicit.
We're Americans. We're very friendly. How are you? How you doing? My name's John. Shake my hand.
I know. I need to have Duncan teach me how to say bless your heart in Dutch.
Well, if I can change gears up, I'm really curious, Duncan, what you would advise. I mean, we've talked about a lot of things, from just kind of following your heart and jumping into the internets to different strategies. If there's anything that somebody who's kind of midway through their blogging and social engagement and they're wondering what they should really do to stand out next, would you have any advice for them off the top of your head?
I think the key thing here is just keep on going and do what you enjoy doing most, because there's no point in writing about something that you're not truly passionate about. So what I've always done is, you know, I pick a topic that I'm passionate about, and for the last 12 months, or 18 months, that has been vSAN, for instance. And before that, it was HA. And before that, it was just ESXi in general. But I just pick a topic that I'm passionate about, try to learn as much as I can about that topic, read about everything, try to figure out, you know, what's going on, what interests people on that topic, and then write about it. There's you know, certain really simple things you can do from a blogging perspective, for instance, is you can look at the keywords that people use to end up on your blog. Well, now you know what people are interested in, so why not write some more articles about that specific topic, or, you know, something that aligns to those keywords. Those are the simple, you know, things that I apply. And, you know, besides that, when it comes to leveraging social media as well, is just throwing out every once in a while some teasers, some bits and pieces around things that you're thinking about, and see how people respond. And if people respond in a positive way, you can write about it. If they respond in an extremely negative way, it may also be smart to write about it, because that could, you know, lead to a lot of traffic. If no one responds, then, you know, you better just back off and leave it at that. But it's just, you know, a matter of, at least for me, it was always a matter of finding something that you're passionate about and just keep on doing it. Because, you know, if you read an article, like I said, if you read an article once every 6 months, you know, people will come back once every 6 months, and there's no real incentive for yourself either to continue writing then. But, you know, if you write something on a regular basis, people will come back on a regular basis. As soon as people start asking questions, providing feedback, you know, it's this loop that gets created. It's more like an energy loop, right? It just keeps the fire going.
I like that visual. Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a big controversy or conversation right now, Duncan, in public space, again, for periodicals and blogs, about keeping comments on their blog or their periodical, where you actually have a very healthy comment section. I hope you're keeping that.
Yeah, so the only thing I started doing is closing down the really old blog articles for commenting. And the main reason for it being is that you get a question on a 6 year or a six years old blog, asking, you know, someone asking if the script that I once wrote for ESX 2.5 still works on vSphere 5.5 update 2. You know, those are kind of irrelevant questions. But for the majority of, for the newer articles, at least for the articles that are, I think I've set it to 2 years or something like that. You know, I encourage people to comment. I'm not typically the person who moderates comments either. I think I had to remove maybe two or three comments in the last 6 years because they were either offensive or, you know, really abusive towards, towards certain vendors. While I realized that it was a competitor speaking, so I removed those. Other than that, I don't remove any articles, even if it's a competitor from VMware or commenting, as long as they disclose where they're from. I think, you know, the whole commenting aspect of blogs is really important, and I've been really fortunate that a lot of people have always been willing to speak up and you know, feedback in my blog posts as well, and provide me with their thoughts around, you know, whatever I was writing out, writing about at that time.
That's great. You've actually cultivated a great community once again. So last question, Duncan, we're in the how-to section here, or advice. In using your role as a public blogger and a, you know, someone who blogs out on the internet, not from the not internally to the company, you are approached by other marketing people from other companies, PR people and marketing people. Do you have any advice for them? Are there any glimmers of hope there in how people interact with bloggers?
When it comes to marketing, the best marketing, I think, from a vendor perspective, you can do is have, you know, appoint one of your passionate SEs or evangelists out. Let them be the person contacting the bloggers, because that's the only way to talk to them. You know, that's the only way to talk to them, because they understand each other. It needs to be on the same level. For in the majority of cases, when a press agency reaches out to me, I kind of lose interest already, because you get this, you know, PowerPoint deck or whatever, doesn't include the details that you need. Then you get this 1 hour phone call with a person who doesn't actually know the product itself. So it typically doesn't go anywhere. So, you know, figure out who's that guy within your company who can actually, you know, bring your company to the next level by helping these bloggers writing these articles or providing the details that they need.
That is great advice.
Lots of positive advice. If you had one thing that you would tell someone, learn from your mistake, don't ever do this again, what would it be?
That is a tough question, because typically, I mean, I know I made a lot of mistakes probably, but I don't regret. I don't really regret anything I've done, to be honest, because most of the things that I've done actually led in the end to something positive. You know, if I would regret anything, it's probably for, you know, not doing the stuff that I wanted to do. So the one thing that I do regret, to be honest, is starting with public speaking fairly late in my career.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think if you want to progress your career to a certain level, public speaking is more or less mandatory. Especially when you start to create this social presence, people will start inviting you for these events. And I can tell you from my own experience, when you need to go up on stage in front of 700 people the very first time you're actually presenting, it's not a lot of fun. So if you can start out at a local user group, for instance, and present in front of 50 people and actually get some experience doing that occasionally, it's probably wise to start with that. I did the 700 people thing first, and it wasn't a huge success. So, you know, I can recommend anyone to start early with that.
Great advice. That is something I've been thinking about bringing into marketing programs as a benefit for influence programs. We've been talking about that. One of the ideas was to get speaker training. So that yep. sort of reinforces that notion. That's great advice.
Yeah, I think the speaker training aspect is that would be really helpful. Personally, I haven't done much around that yet. It's something that I've always promised myself I would do, but it's difficult to find the time. But it's, you know, I think it's something you need to do, and especially when you're terrified of public speaking. And I know a lot of people are terrified of public speaking because it just doesn't come natural. And I've been in the same position. I've always been terrified of public speaking, even to the point where when I was in school, I would just, you know, I would physically get sick if I knew I would, you know, need to go up in front of a classroom, and that's only 15 or 20 people. So just imagine how you feel when you go up in front of a room of 150 people or 250 people. It gets far, far worse. So, you know, if you can get used to that, start early.
And I love that too, because it's build the skill before you think you'll need it, because it's where you want to go. That's awesome.
Well, this has been really great, Duncan. I really appreciate your time and sharing some of your journey on the way to wherever you're going. It's been really interesting. Appreciate it. If people need to find you on the internet, where would they look?
Well, I think the best thing is to start on Twitter, DuncanYB. Otherwise, you can also find me on my blog, so yellow-bricks.com. You can leave a comment there. As I'm also on LinkedIn. Feel free to connect there, because I don't have any particular. I connect to anyone, because I think it's from a work point of view important to build this big network, and that's what I use LinkedIn for. And as I said, you know, Facebook probably not a big chance I'll accept many more people, but you can always try, right?
We can try to buy you a beer.
yeah, if you buy me a beer on a Friday evening, then you know.
I'm like, yeah, AB, come up, AB testing channels with Duncan right now. Hold on, let me see what he does live on the line.
Well, but Duncan, I will point out you are
tight, so don't worry.
Yeah, Duncan, I will point out you are super approachable. If people do run into you at a show or an event, I mean, I counsel people not to hesitate to come up and say hi, and maybe if there might be a chance to go out for a beer, right?
No, and I think, you know, to be honest, I think that applies to the broader Yammer community. Every single person I've met, all of the bloggers I've met, they're super approachable. You know, sometimes they may come across as a bit grumpy on Twitter, but, you know, keep in mind they're real people as well, so they have a normal life. You never know what just happened at home or whatever. So, you know, they're all normal guys. You can definitely approach me at any event if there's any type of feedback you have, any, you know, any type of comment you have on in terms of the blog articles that I did or any of the books that I've written or something that you feel, you know, you have a question about or interested in. You know, just walk up to me and say hi, introduce yourself, and let's have a chat.
Awesome. Well, once again, Duncan, thanks. Amy, Matt, and from me, thanks everybody for listening. We'll see y'all next week.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
I just ordered a cat tree that Amazon said, oh, it'll be here tomorrow. And once I actually look in, because I live in the wilderness, it's like, well, we'll get it to you by, you know, Monday.
Or next month. Ugh.
The number of times cat tree has come up on this podcast.
Wow, they started, our cat tree wore out, and they started in on the couch yesterday. So.
That's yep. bad.
Yeah, that oh, is.
We're terrified. We're like, no!
Please tell me you don't own a cat tree, though.
A what?
A cat tree.
I don't even own a cat. Why would I need a tree?
Well, that's
in case a cat comes along.
's bacon, and then followed by unicorns in that order. And I hate all of them. Come on, really?
That really leads us to the question of how did you wind up on this show?
Yeah, I have no clue.
Did it hurt as much as you thought?
No, it was okay. It wasn't bad.
just for that, there's going to be unicorn bombing happening on your Twitter feed.
Oh, we're gonna we'll change out for this show. We'll change out the background to the page. It'll be like animated unicorns. It'll. Yeah.